All I'm going to attempt to do here is to provide you with a rational, heartfelt, stunningly rewarding alternative to management as you and I both know it. It will speak for itself. Or if it doesn't, you'll go the way you were going when you first came to this meeting. But if it does, as I hope it will, as I sincerely trust it will, when we're done, and if the path I've outlined here makes cosmic sense to you, your life will take an entirely new path from the one you're currently on. Whether you stay on that path or not is, of course, up to you. All I can promise here is that we'll get started together. You have my commitment to that.
All revolutions begin with someone whose vision exceeds the vision of those around him. Michael Gerber is such a visionary, who knows that business can and should mean more than just work. He envisions business as a personal dojo, a martial arts practice hall, where we all practice to become more than who we are. The personal rewards are transformative, and the impact on business is profound. Thousands of business owners and managers who have worked with Michael Gerber over the past 20 years have proven to themselves that a business on the way to enlightenment is a joy to behold. This program is a combination of live seminar and studio recordings. Nightingale Conant wishes you every success as you embark on your journey toward e-myth mastery. Here's Michael Gerber.
What is an e-myth manager? An e-myth manager is someone who manages in an e-myth brand business. An e-myth brand business is what I've come to call a super smart small business. It's a business that operates in a comprehensively integrated way. It is a system of means to produce ends. Most of all, it is a system designed specifically to produce one clear result in the world. So understand, for you to be an effective manager, for you to be an effective entrepreneur, for you to be someone who is in a systemically sound and integrated business, there must be one result you're committed to in the world. Most of all, this one clear result must be understood throughout the organization, throughout the enterprise, throughout the business, throughout the level of practice that's being done in the business, among everyone in the business. And everyone in the business must understand that to the degree they're not committed to that one result to be produced in the world, that the organization of which they're part, the enterprise of which they're a part, will become less and less and less effective, not to say less efficient. This is a business I first described in my book, The E-Myth. Let me describe for you, those of you who have not read The E-Myth, those of you who are not familiar with The E-Myth, what The E-Myth is. The E-Myth is the entrepreneurial myth. And the entrepreneurial myth essentially says that people who go into business in our country, and in fact throughout the world, wherever I've been, and I've been in just about every country in the world, most of those people who go into business are not entrepreneurs. The E-Myth is the entrepreneurial myth. And essentially it says people go into business for absolutely the wrong reason. In other words, most people who believe that entrepreneurs start businesses are wrong. People who go into businesses in our country and every country in the world are in fact not entrepreneurs, but what I've come to call technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. In other words, the bookkeeper starts a bookkeeping business. The accountant starts an accountancy. The software guy starts a software business. The consultant, a consultancy. The insurance agent becomes a general agent, and so forth and so forth and so forth and so on, each of them believing, because I understand how to do the tactical, in your words, technical work of the business, I understand how to build a business that does that technical work. And the fact of the matter is it's 180 degrees from the truth. Knowing how to do the tactical work of a business has nothing to do with building a successful business. So most businesses we've discovered are not entrepreneurial businesses at all, but businesses suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure started by a technician who knows how to do some form of work, who then goes to work in his or her own business, doing it, busy, knocking his or her brains out to get a tactical result, meaning to sell something, to make something, to ship something. Working, as you might say, at the bottom of the business, doing it, busy, creating a business that ultimately depends upon him or her. Creating a business that ultimately depends upon you. Creating a business that ultimately is you. But unfortunately, a business that is you is effectively working for a lunatic because you're doing all the wrong work. Now understand, very large companies have been built with this wrong view of the world. And I say it's a wrong view of the world because ultimately it doesn't work. Ultimately, any business that's built upon a single individual or partners ultimately must fail. Unless those people are transformed in the process. Unless the business is transformed in the process. Unless the business becomes what I call, perhaps selfishly, an E-Myth brand business. But understand, I brand businesses according to an E-Myth brand business and all the rest. What is an E-Myth brand business? Well, McDonald's is an E-Myth brand business. McDonald's is an extraordinary entrepreneurial exercise, not in futility, but inventiveness. McDonald's started in a completely different way than almost every business in the world. McDonald's started as an idea, as a profoundly simple idea. Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, found McDonald's in San Bernardino and saw the business that he came to sell malted milk machines to as an extraordinary product, the most extraordinary product he had ever seen. A business product. The business to Ray Kroc was a product. Write this down. The business to the entrepreneur is a product. The business is not a place to go to work. The business is a product to the entrepreneur. And what I'm suggesting to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that that mindset, the business as a product, must run clear through the organization of every enterprise in order for that enterprise to thrive. And it does not in 99% of all enterprises. And that's why all businesses that were started out with the hope of becoming successful fail. 84% of all new businesses will be out of business before they reach their 10th anniversary. Fortune 500 companies, the average lifetime of a Fortune 500 company is 40 years. Microsoft didn't exist when I was born in 1936. Microsoft didn't exist when I graduated from high school in 1952. Microsoft came into being just yesterday, and it is now becoming one of the largest forces in the world of technological change and transformation. Started out with an idea, but it started out with the wrong idea. And I'm going to suggest ultimately it will pay a price for the wrong idea. And today we're going to be sharing wrong ideas from right ideas at the risk of sounding like I have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. But as we begin to pursue this logic, and that's really what we're here to discuss, logic. There is a logic to the way the world works. There's a logic to the way a business works. There's a logic to the way the most extraordinary businesses are formed. There's a logic to the way that all of us can manage successfully beyond our wildest imagination. Defy the logic and you destroy any hope. So this is a mind game we're going to be going through today. Ray Kroc discovered McDonald's and saw the most extraordinary product he had ever seen, the business called McDonald's, and he convinced the McDonald brothers to give him the franchise rights to McDonald's, and they did. They didn't need them. They're busy making hamburgers. They also knew that you couldn't franchise McDonald's, and they knew it because they'd already done it and failed. Ray Kroc knew something else. Ray Kroc went back to Des Plaines, Illinois with the franchise rights to McDonald's, borrowed the money to start his first store, and did something different than anyone ever does when they go into business for themselves. He went to work on McDonald's, not in it. He went to work on that very first store, not in it. He went to work on it to create a pre-production prototype of a mass-producible product, a turnkey system that would assure the customer, the franchisee, that if in fact they utilize this magical system, the golden goose that laid the golden eggs, their life would be assured. That's what Ray Kroc did. Ray Kroc did something most people have no understanding of doing. Please write this down because it is core to everything we'll be talking about today. He worked on his business, not in it. If anything be called a Michael Gerber mantra, it's he worked on it, not in it. And that's going to run through our entire day today. Most managers are working in their business. They're not working on their business. Most managers are solving problems. Wrong. Most managers are doing it, busy, driving themselves crazy until re-engineering. And Mr. Hammer, the Dr. Kevorkian of American management, made it possible for you to leave, to find another way. You're sorry, we don't need you here anymore. Does anybody know this to be true? Does anybody know what the statistics are? Has anybody seen that some 2 million people are being cut out of major corporations in this country and worldwide every single year, and it's been going on for a decade? Does anybody know this to be true? Have you experienced it yourself? Have you seen it out there in the world? Suddenly, large organizations are becoming what? Lean and mean, because they started out wrong. The way you start your business, the way you start managing, will tell you exactly what you're going to face 2 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, so you better absolutely be certain about how you start anything. Start something right, and I will assure you, everything will work out fine. Start something wrong, and I will assure you, everything will work out bad. And I'm essentially saying to know the difference between the two is to truly be aware. So we're going to be talking about awareness today. Talk about a condition that exists in every business in this room, but that we're quiet about. Effectively, what we're going to do is to truly begin to think about management as a profession, but a profession with an ethical standard. Not a moral standard. Not a professional standard. Not so that we can form a union, so that we can argue with them, whomever they might be, but an ethical standard. We're going to try to define what the ethical standard of a manager would be in today's organization. I'm going to suggest to you as we go through this process that the ethical standard of a manager who is first someone and then second, employed. You hear me? First, someone with an ethical standard, and then someone employed. If that were the case, what in fact would happen? That the first someone with the ethical standard would begin to look at the places in which one could be employed through the prism of his or her ethical standard. I'm going to suggest to you, despite the fact that I know everybody here does that already, I'm going to suggest the vast majority of people in the world don't do that at all, and that's why they're selling silly stuff that doesn't work, that makes people sick, because they left that at the door. Now, hear me, I'm not suggesting anybody here left it at the door. But I am suggesting, ladies and gentlemen, that out there in the world of corporate America, out there in the world of corporate wherever, out there in the world of small business, every place you go, we're just getting by. And there is no ethical standard. And if there is, nobody articulated it. Because effectively, I have never been hired by anyone ever, and I'm 60 years old, going on 61, who said, let me explain the ethical standards of our business. Let me explain the things we believe in. Let me explain our philosophy. Let me explain what drives every action in our business, and let me explain the one thing we're here to do. How many of you have ever been confronted by what I'll call the ethical organization? I'm going to be talking about ethics here, but I'm not a moralist, and I'm not an ethicist, and I'm not a rabbi, and I'm not your minister, and I'm not your priest, and I'm not a guru. I'm just a guy. Now, let me give you some understanding of what we have done over the past two decades to understand what, in fact, our ethics are. We say at the E-Myth Academy, transforming small business worldwide, one small business owner at a time. That tells you something very, very clear. We're in the business of transforming small business. That's our business, transforming small business. Transforming small business does not mean introducing change to small business. It means the chrysalis to the butterfly. It means that our mission, our purpose, our aim is to be able to transform any small business, wherever we find them, into a miracle. Not just productive, not just making money, but a miracle. A totally alive, enlightened experience. And the second thing I say is one small business owner at a time. So we're in a room here, a group of us, and I don't believe I'm going to transform anybody. Because the only way I can do that is with you personally, and with you personally, and with you personally. We have to engage one to the other. I can't just send you the product and hope to hell everything's going to happen, because you know it won't. But I can send it to awaken your frame of reference to a new opportunity. And so in our business, we work with our clients, small business owners. Once they got the point of view, once they understood working on it, not in it, once they understood this completely different way of thinking about business than most small business owners will ever understand. Once they get that, once they buy it, once they believe in it, at that point, then we engage them in a relationship. And that was the nature of our business, to transform the world of professional services, to be able to provide to a small business owner every bit of help he or she could need to go from where they are to where they purport to want to be. Cost of a minimum wage kid. So we effectively have taken highly expensive traditional consulting and transformed it into very inexpensive personal business development training to take someone from here and help them to there. How? By telling them how? No, by giving them a process through which they discover how. You don't hand a person to fish, you teach them to fish. So I'm going to tell you a little story called the E-Myth Manager. The E-Myth is the entrepreneurial myth. You say, well, what does that mean about an E-Myth Manager? Effectively, the E-Myth has become an adjective. The E-Myth has become a verb. The hundreds of thousands of people who have read the E-Myth, effectively, it's become more than what it means. What it's become is a way of building a business that works. Works to do what? To give the owner, to give the people who work in that business, to give the customers more life. So we're here to talk about more life. Is that a reasonable thing to do? Would anybody be interested in having more life? Would that mean something to anybody in the room? Would you like to get rid of the frustrations that plague you day after day after day? Would you like to get rid of all of the false things we do just to fill the day so we can get on with the next one and then the next one and then the next one? Has anybody here ever experienced the fact that you spend many, 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 many days asleep? Anybody. You know what I'm talking about? On automatic. Just going through the motions. You get up, you go do it, you go to sleep. You get up, you go do it, you go to sleep. Thank God it's Friday. And now you got the weekend sleep. And that's a little different. You know how difficult it is to wrench one out of their habit? I do. See, if you say to me that you don't have a habit, this doesn't mean that to you, that you have a life that's full of absolutely extraordinarily transformative things going on day after day after day. I'm going to sit down, you're going to do the seminar. So we're here to talk about something important. It's not just a recording, it's not just a seminar, it's not just something to go through. It's about a completely transformative way of looking at something that has become so ordinary in the world. Everybody, everybody, everybody here knows what I mean. So an eMyth manager is one who manages an eMyth brand business, a super smart small business, a business which operates with integrity to produce one specific result in the world. So having said that, let me describe what an eMyth manager isn't. He or she isn't a motivator. An eMyth manager knows that motivation is a myth. So today we're going to be discussing the myth of motivation. He or she isn't a manager of people. An eMyth manager knows that people are unmanageable. Have any of you finally come to that conclusion? He or she doesn't attempt to control people. An eMyth manager knows that people are uncontrollable. My God, I can't even control me. How am I going to control them? Has anybody here ever gone to sleep with a plan and woken up with a different one? Anybody here ever decided you're going to do something and end up doing something totally different? Anybody here decided to get married and ended up divorced? Anybody here ever had a kid and then wondered why you did it? Anybody here ever decided to do anything and found out you don't have the power to keep your mind on one thing? That's a good idea. There we do it. That's a good idea. Now let's do that. We're constantly careening around ourselves in an orbit, not of our choosing. In any other place, you'd call it insane. Here we call it, that's how it is. That's what we do. That's who I am. Let me say, we don't have to be that way, but we are. The eMyth manager doesn't believe in the 80-20 rule. You're all familiar with the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule says that 80% of our results are produced by 20% of our people. Anybody ever heard that? Insurance industry is built on the 80-20 rule. The real estate industry is built on the 80-20 rule. Small business is built on the 80-20 rule. 80% of our results are produced by 20% of our people. And so that's why 82% of people who start in real estate are gone by the end of the third year. That's why 82% of the people who start in insurance are gone by the end of the third year. Because it's the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule is a belief system harbored by people who believe that you throw it up against the wall and so much sticks, and that's our business, finding out what sticks. So the eMyth manager does not believe in the 80-20 rule. He knows that organizations and people who believe in the 80-20 rule don't know how to produce results without harming a great many people in the process. 80% of the people, to be exact. Lives are lost, lives are wasted, lives are spent when we operate our business as though it's a numbers game. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the past. The future is, it's about people. And more and more and more and more people are going to discover that reality, not of their own choosing, but because effectively more and more people are discovering themselves on their own. This is the decade, the transition from the career to self-employment, from the career employee to the contract worker. It is happening in such numbers that most of us, if we were to sit down and study it, would be thrown completely for a loss. And it is growing exponentially to become more and more and more and more and more the truth. Because large organizations have had a mindset about the job, the job, the job, employees, own someone's time totally, own someone's time totally, and you can get them to do anything. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. Why? Because automation, the information explosion, technology, everything has changed. and the world is growing smaller. And we're now not competing with Murray across the street. We're competing with somebody across the world. And effectively, they're doing it better in many, 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 many cases. So we're suddenly, all of us, thrown awash to rediscover what it means to work, what it means to create an economic certainty for ourselves, what it means to be our own boss, to have control over our lives, to have a life at all. Huge questions in this day and age. Huge questions. In fact, the E-Myth manager doesn't believe in the vast majority of common sense bromides we've grown to believe in business, such as, and I'll be talking about any number of these during the course of the day, teamwork, quality circles, re-engineering, empowerment, management by objectives, training as it's done everywhere it's done and has been done for the past century, sales meetings, human resources, performance reviews, meaning what's right with you or wrong with you, seminars, signs on the wall, affirmations. We live, ladies and gentlemen, in an object-oriented world. We live in an object-oriented world. That's not the way the world was built. It's the way our minds have made it in the past century. It is increasingly becoming an object-oriented world, meaning the outside determines what goes on in the inside. Do you follow me? The outside determines what's going on in the inside. And we need to become a subject-oriented world. Even though I'm sure everybody here walks around with the feeling like you are subject-oriented, you are subject-oriented, you are yourself, you are thinking about yourself, you are concerned about yourself, the reality of it is our perception of self has been created based upon outside influences and our genes. Nothing I can do about your genes, but we can do something about our perception of reality on the outside. So the E-Myth manager is not about an object-oriented world. The E-Myth manager is about an inner-oriented world. This view of the world leads to management as we know it today. Management as we know it today, please don't take my word for it, is essentially a management by manipulation, by coercion, by motivation, and if you'll excuse the expression, by masturbation. We haven't a clue how to get results the way, in fact, everybody perceives we need to get results as managers. We haven't a clue. And I'm suggesting it could be something remarkably different. So let's talk about then what the E-Myth manager is. I want you to write down some words, and we'll be coming back to these words later on in the day. I'd like you to write down this. It's called the intimate organization. And the E-Myth manager does not manage people. What does the manager manage? The E-Myth manager manages process. So write down the focus of management is the process, not the person. And the focus of the person, and we'll define what that person is and who that person is, that up to this point may be called the manager's subordinate, the manager's employee, and all the words that are used to describe that person. We're going to use a completely different set of words to describe that person. And we're also going to use a very different set of ideas to describe the relationship between the manager and that person and work. Because there are truly three different points here. You might say almost an equilateral triangle. And the one point is the work, the second point is the manager, and the third point is the technician. And effectively, the manager and the technician must come together to discover how to improve the process by which results are produced within that organization, within that unity, within that trinity. In order to do what? In order to produce the one result the enterprise at large has been created to produce. So I also want you to write down what is the one result. My organization is there to produce. I understand when I talk about all of this. A person here is from a small business, is a person here from a home office, that is, you're by yourself in your bedroom. If a person here is from a major corporation, it doesn't matter. The logic that we're going to be dealing with today deals with every single one of them. Essentially, all of the re-engineering that's been going on out in the world in major corporations have been going on at the top. The re-engineering, the top of the organization, and they end up suffering from the fact that they find themselves unable to change the bottom of the organization. Has anybody experienced the difficulty of changing the bottom of a large organization? The bottom is impossible to change. So what do we say is, let's get some other people, let's get better people, believing that the problem at the bottom of the organization is the people aren't good enough. Deming put a sword through that one years ago. Man walked around in his 90s speaking to huge events of managers. The Fortune 100, the Fortune 5,000, the Fortune 1,000, and all he do for this four-day seminar is beat him up for 2 days. Just abuse him. And I mean, they'd get up and they'd walk out. They couldn't stand it, this insufferable old man. I mean, what an axe to grind. He said, you don't know what you're doing. Every single thing you've been taught to do as a manager is exactly the opposite of what you should be doing. Says the results in a great business have nothing to do with people. The results in a great business have to do with the system people use to produce those results. So therefore, people should never be heroes or bums. A natural community, he said, which is what a great business should be. People are just who they are. People are just who they are. Committed to the ethic of the organization. Committed to their own ethical life. And committed to discovering what it means to be an ethical human being in an ethical organization. Pursuing my own personal path. In alignment with the path of the organization. And when I'm not in alignment with the path of the organization, because I have an ethical standard within my soul, I'll leave. Neither heroes nor bums. Some woman in her hiring seminar we had done at the E-Myth Academy recently, woman was in her late 40s, and she had been her entire life working in major corporations, and her last job was with a major computer company. She said, after the interview, came up to my wife and she looked her square in the eye. My wife is the chief executive officer of our company. She said, I've been giving up emotional ground for the past 20 years of my life. I've been giving up my life for 20 years and there's only so much left. And I'm terrified I'm going to lose that too. This is the first place I swear I've had the hope that maybe I could reclaim some. That's not a statement to glorify what we do. A statement of the condition of people in work. I'm not telling something everybody doesn't know. Anybody ever known anybody who worked for a lunatic? Anybody? I mean, what do you think all these dysfunctional families do? They send them into corporations. I mean, what do you think all this dysfunctionalism, where does it go? It goes to the job. Has anybody ever known a dysfunctional human being on the job? All of us are. All of us are. Understand that's the extraordinary opportunity. All of us are. We haven't an idea how to live a balanced life. We don't have an idea how to go to work and go home and live a balanced life. We don't have a notion of what that means. We just do what we do. We do what we do, what we do, what we do, and if it works out, we take credit for it, and if it doesn't, we blame everybody else. You know what I mean. We have no idea, and then we go to another job hoping that get rid of this bad one, get another one. Outside, 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 outside. Nothing going to happen out there. Don't you understand that? Until it happens in here. Didn't Pogo say it? The enemy are us. The problem with American managers is they are not managers. But not managers first. First, they're not whole people. And so every pain we experience on the job is doomed to come from the pain we experience in ourselves. So effectively, what I'm really talking about is management by choice. When one chooses one's course of life, one better go through a process, an absolutely clear process that says, I am a whole person wishing to become even more whole. I am a whole person wishing to become even more whole. Anything that contributes to that is good. Anything that takes away from that is evil. Good and evil are to be seen as they either contribute to my becoming more of a human being or they distract from that. Now hear me, the devil plays interesting games. You know how easily you can convince yourself that bad is good and good is bad. I mean, you can easily do that. Has anybody ever done that? You know what I'm talking about? What I'm talking about is the choices we make. So here, what we're going to begin is your role as a manager all over again. And for those of you who wish to become a manager, we're going to start all over again. And you're going to begin to understand that there are choices to be made, that there is a system that I call the management system, that there is a methodology, which I'll call the management methodology, that there is a structure, which I'm going to call the manager's structure. There's a way of going about this that is completely contradictory to anything you have ever learned anywhere in relationship to the work of management in a business, and I'm going to take you through the process so that when you get out of here today, you will have a clear picture of the form this thing takes, ideally. But understand how to do it is something else again. You can't do that in one day. If I can get you just to see the thing as a whole in relationship to the other wholes with which it interacts, with which it relates, it'll be a miracle. Because we have so many thoughts about management, so many thoughts about the job, so many thoughts about the boss, so many thoughts about people. Come in late, they go home early, they're smoking dope at lunch. Gee, if it weren't for people, I wouldn't have a problem. Every manager in the world tells me, you got to get better people. How do I get better people? Anybody ever said that? Raise your hand if you've ever said that. You're not even going to admit it, right? Thank you, thank you, thank you. An honest man in the front row. Oh, and only could get better people. Let's go a little bit further with the E-myth. So the E-myth is the entrepreneurial myth, and the entrepreneurial myth says that people start businesses and build a business around themselves. Technicians start businesses and go to work as technicians in the business with an entrepreneurial seizure, doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it. Where do managers come from? In any company, where does the manager come from? The manager comes from being good at the work he did, being good at the work she did. Isn't that true? If you're a good bookkeeper, you become the accounting manager. If you're a good salesperson, you become the sales manager. If you're a good software guy, you become the software supervisor. If you become good at this, they make you that. And I understand when I say good, you're just better than anybody else. Here, how'd you like to become a manager, they say. Anybody here do that? Anybody here good at one thing, then they made you a manager of it? The presumption being because you understand how to do the tactical work, you understand how to manage other people doing the work. False! It is the biggest lie in business. It is true, but it's insufficient.
It is insufficient to know how to sell in order to become a manager of salespeople. Selling it is different than managing those who sell it. Selling it is different than being an extraordinary manager of sales. And that's why most managers of sales ultimately find themselves scrambling and doing whatever they can to do to get the result, which means what? They go back to selling. In any company I've ever been in, a manager of sales is spending 80% of their time doing the tactical work of selling and 20% of their time scrambling, looking for answers, looking for excuses, and looking out for the boss. Rationalizing. Well, the customers are changing. Well, the competition is changing. Well, there's a problem out there. Well, the demographics are shifting if they really get sophisticated. You know what I'm saying? They'll use anything as an excuse. Why not? When in fact, the real problem is what? They haven't a clue as to what it means to be a manager. Let me tell you, if you were to give a manager in any business of your choice a true manager's test, they would fail it. Talk about what a true management test would be. They would fail it. What's even worse than that is then they make them a manager of managers. I mean, has anybody seen this one play itself out? What do they call it? The Peter Principle? Now they're at the top. Now they don't have to do anything to screw it up. And they became leaders. Now they're no longer managers. That was an excuse for them losing all that money and cutting all those people. Get rid of the fat. Get rid of the fat. Get rid of the fat. That's you. You didn't know that. You're a diet. Ladies and gentlemen, hear me. All of the stuff we've been told to be true is in fact exactly the opposite of what's true. We have to truly understand what an extraordinary business is, and we have to start at the bottom. So we call ourselves grassroots consultants. You have to start at the bottom. You have to start with the one store. You understand what I mean by the one store? In McDonald's, it's the one store. At Disneyland, it's the one ride. Federal Express, it's the one truck. You understand, if I can get the one truck right, if I can get the one ride right, if I can get the one store right, if I can get that right, I can get anything right. But if I start with a hole and try to get that right first, I'll end up sending all this down to that little store, and all that can happen is that little store will say, where did this come from? Up there. What does that create? Us and them, us and them, us and them, us and them. Great businesses, ladies and gentlemen, are built from the bottom up, not from the top down. And every manager must understand that and take one little store within your purview and go to work on it, just like Ray Kroc did, on it, not in it. And that's what the E-Myth Manager does. And we're going to be talking about that whole process here. And there is a process here, thank God. And there is something every single one of you can learn to do, thank God. And it's applied in every single kind of business imaginable. High tech, low tech, fast growth, slow growth, mature businesses, immature businesses, small businesses, teeny businesses, home offices, doesn't matter what it is. Once you understand the system, once you understand the process, not a process I invented, once you understand what W. Clement Stone called the success system that never fails, once you understand that this is a methodology, it doesn't matter what you know, it doesn't matter where you've been, it doesn't matter what your experience is, it doesn't matter what your education is, it doesn't matter anything about that at all, once you understand this process, you will, in fact, in time, become what I call an E-Myth Manager,
and you'll understand the relationship between the manager and the entrepreneur and the technician. And there's a very clear, structured, logical relationship between those three. And when you understand the relationship, you'll also understand why, without that relationship, nothing can work. So we're going to go to this logically. I'm not here to motivate you. I'm not here to activate you. I'm not here to do anything other than to engage you in a thought process so that you can see this thing whole. So let's talk about the business, which we'll now call the enterprise. Let's understand that there are three levels in every organization. The first is the enterprise. And at the enterprise level, we're talking about the entrepreneur. I don't care how small your business is. It is an enterprise. It only becomes a business here. And that is the manager's accountability. The entrepreneur's accountability is the enterprise. The manager's accountability is the business. The technician's accountability is the practice. And so we suddenly see the organization as an enterprise with three levels of activity: the enterprise, the business, and the practice. What is the entrepreneur accountable for? The entrepreneur is accountable for the vision. And the vision is best defined is the one thing this enterprise is here to do in its lifetime. The one thing this enterprise is here to do in its lifetime. It's called your vision. That is the accountability of the entrepreneur. And the entrepreneur communicates that vision with a story. And that story, you better have it cold in your heart, in your mind, in your blood, in your viscera, in your guts. You better know that story cold. And most businesses do not have a story that the entrepreneur knows cold, but I'll guarantee you Ray Kroc did. And I'll guarantee you Fred Smith at Federal Express does. Let me tell you a story. What's the story? The story is about my business. Let me tell you what we're here to do. On time, worldwide. Boom, that's my story. That's what we do. When you absolutely, positively got to get that sucker there overnight, on time, absolutely, every time, that's what we do. That's all we do. That's the promise of the business. The process of the business is to make it possible for us to do that. Hear me. The promise and the process. The manager is accountable for the process. The entrepreneur is accountable for the vision. The manager is accountable for the process. The business of this enterprise is producing this singularly well-articulated result. The problem with most businesses, they're trying to do 47 different things. Nobody knows what they're there to do. Add one more thing to a business, and you've already doubled the complexity of the business. Add three more things, you've tripled it. Add four more things, and you're out of business. And that's effectively what everybody's trying to do. Get more, because we're not doing what we're doing well enough. So let's get more, the idea being if I get more, I can get more of that, and get more of that, and get more of that, and get more of that. And if I got more of that, then I don't need as much as this. No, I'm not making very much money on this, but if I make a little bit of money on that, and a little bit of money on that, and a little bit of money on that, and a little bit of money on that, I'll be making a whole pot full of money. You understand? The logic, and the technician, and the practice are producing the results. Hear me, it's very, very simple. There's a vision that runs throughout the organization. Everyone is tied to the vision. And everybody understands their role in relationship to the vision. Without the vision, the business has no purpose. For a business with no vision, which has no purpose, the purpose becomes financial.
And then we talk about the stakeholders. And then we talk about the shareholders. And then we talk about the price per. And then we talk about the all of the dividends. And then we talk about what you're going to earn this quarter. And then we talk about, and then we talk about, and then we talk about a business that's focused on those things I just mentioned is a diseased business. Am I saying it shouldn't be making money? No. Disney makes money with a vision. They know exactly what they're there to do at Disney World. And the managers know it. And the practitioners, the technicians know it. So it's a unified aim. Can you see that? It's a unified aim. Does this sound like a foreign company to most of you in this room? You know that, in fact, most businesses are not a unified aim. But do you know that there are businesses in the world that are? And so rather than talking in the negative about all those that don't, just look at the ones that are. Look at the ones that do. At Federal Express, they say, two words drive the business, the promise and the process. Write this down. Two words drive a business. Promise and the process. Everything that goes on in an extraordinary business ties to the promise and the process. Write this question down for yourself. What promise is my company here to make? Not what promise says, but what promise is my company here to make? And hear me, it has to be a promise that is impossible to keep. Write that down. It's got to be a promise that's impossible to keep. Michael, are you a lunatic? No. There's a statement which says, what's the one thing we could do that's impossible to do? But if we could do it, we'd transform our business. Ray Kroc did the impossible. Walt Disney did the impossible. Fred Smith did the impossible. Every extraordinary entrepreneur has done the impossible. The impossible given the way we think. Of course it wasn't impossible because they could do it. It was impossible in relationship to the way everybody else thinks. Got to get out of the way everybody else thinks. In Handy's book, an extraordinary little book written in the 90s, The Age of Unreason, he talks about the absolute clear need for these following three things. Changes are different this time, and this time is the age of unreason. Everything that is happening around us is completely unreasonable. We have no way of dealing with the changes that are going on around us other than go to sleep. Now understand, if we were to spend the time today to go back to my birthday, in 1936, June 20th, and come up to the present time and list all of the changes that have occurred in the world during that time and in the universe, ladies and gentlemen, we wouldn't have time to do anything else. And those changes are so dramatic, so huge, it's a wonder that all of us right now are on our knees in awe. But we have a way as people of going to sleep in change. And we go to a sleep in change so that we don't have to deal with the impossible. The impossible is happening as we speak. They just cloned a sheep. Think how we take these things. Oh, another thing, you know. Just another thing. Oh, well, you know, a billion bits in a space the size of my thumbnail, well, just another thing, just another thing. What does that mean? What that means, you're out of a job. We don't know that. We don't even want to think about that. So he says that the changes are different this time. They're discontinuous and not part of a pattern. Such discontinuity happens from time to time in history, although it's confusing and disturbing, particularly to those in power. So you just imagine people in power scrambling to ignore discontinuous change or to take advantage of it. Second, that it's the little changes which can in fact make the biggest differences in our lives, even if these go unnoticed at the time, and that it's the changes in the way our work is organized that will have the greatest impact on the way you and I live. Is that happening today? Anybody? Do you know that that's happening today? Do you know that contract workers are becoming more and more the reality, and the career worker is becoming less and less of a reality? Do you know that Manpower, the temp company, is the largest employer in the country today of what? Of temps? You understand things are changing? You understand what the impact of that is on the manager of the future, of the manager of today? He goes on to finalize that discontinuous change requires discontinuous upside-down thinking to deal with it. Even if both thinkers and thoughts appear absurd at first sight. So hear me, if I appear absurd at first sight, if I seem to be railing about much too much about much too little, ladies and gentlemen, hear me, I'm not railing enough. I'm not railing enough, and railing ain't going to make any difference. The only thing that's going to make a difference is if you understand the point of view of all this, and the point of view of all this is that if you are going to manage anything, you must understand what that means in order to create new value in yourself in a world in which the value of a manager, an E-Myth manager, is going to soar. And the value of the manager of old is going to diminish to the point of being invisible. And you have to make that transition. Now, I happen to call it an E-Myth manager. You can call it anything else you like. But hear me, our lives are on the line. Now, if you own a small business, it's even more so. Because what has to happen in your small business is you have to be able to discriminate between practice, between the business, and the enterprise. You have to discriminate between your job and someone else's. And you have to be able to understand the difference between being the entrepreneur, being the manager, and being the practitioner or technician. And to the degree you don't understand the difference and how to effectively build a business that honors that difference, then you will never create a successful small business in the future. You can't. The odds are so much against us. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the three levels of the business. We'll be talking about how to approach the three levels of the business. Thank you. Thank you.